I am Heidi Holt, and I'm live from the KAXE studios on the Mississippi River in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Thank you for listening today. We want to welcome you back to our statewide conversation. Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan is away this week, so we're going to be talking with Education Commissioner Mary Catherine Ricker. These conversations are your opportunity to ask questions about Minnesota's response and plans during this COVID-19 pandemic. If you didn't get a chance to send or call in your question this week, you can email covid@ambers.org or call 612-562-9895. We are teaming up with 18 community radio stations of Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association to bring you COVID-19 information for the state of Minnesota. Mary Catherine Ricker is the Education Commissioner of Minnesota. She's a native of Hibbing, National Board Certified Middle School English teacher with over a decade of classroom experience in classrooms from St. Paul to St. Cloud to Washington to South Korea to Yemen. She previously served as Executive Vice President of the American Federation of Teachers and the President of the St. Paul Federation of Teachers. And Mary Catherine Ricker joins us now. Thanks for being with us today.
Heidi, thanks so much for having me. I love listening to your show as I'm up north visiting family, so it's wonderful to be with you.
Oh, thank you. That was going to be my first hard-hitting question. If you're from Hibbing, does that mean that you got to regularly be in that beautiful auditorium?
Yes, yes. Be in it and use that stage to walk across it for graduation. So something very, like, I have always hold with me.
Yeah, and so for people listening who have not been to Hibbing, it's definitely a place to see. It's it might be the most gorgeous high school auditorium in the state of Minnesota, I would say.
I'm comfortable saying that.
All right, well,
absolutely.
Let's begin our conversation today with an overview of the plan for Minnesota schools. Let's talk about the safe learning model that your department, the Department of Health, and the executive branch put together. First, I wonder if you would tell us a little bit about how you developed this plan. Were there places you study where things worked and where they didn't work? How did it come together?
Yeah, thank you so much for asking. And we really, you know, we looked in all directions to gather information for what would be the strongest safe learning plan going forward. And we held listening sessions and worked in community with educators across the state. We held feedback groups with students and families about their distance learning experience. We sat down and listened to the experiences from community groups, as well as educator groups and administrators, which is listen to what their experience was and, quite frankly, what their hopes and dreams were going forward. So we made sure to do a lot of listening. It's actually one of the reasons from even the first phase of distance learning last spring to the second phase that we enhanced our support, because we were trying to meet the needs of our students and families and school communities in real time. And because we also knew that we were offering, our school communities were offering school-age child care, we also had child care centers open, we were also really closely learning from those experiences where students were in person, in small groups, with all of those public health protocols in place, right? The physical distancing, the hygiene practices, wearing of masks, careful using entrances to school, busing. And so we used all of that Minnesota-based information. And then, and of course, with what our Department of Public Health was learning, what the CDC was telling us, all of the research that's been emerging about the virus itself and the way this pandemic is behaving in communities, taking in that information as well. And it was really that wealth of emerging information that helped create that safe learning plan that is localized in its approach, built on the data that we have, and of course grounded in the science that we've learned.
Tell us about how that math formula works for communities throughout the state.
Yeah, so there are, we want to make sure we're supporting our school communities to consider a number of factors when they determine if they start the school year in a distance learning model, a hybrid model, or an in-person model. And so the first thing they would start with that localized approach, is they're going to start with their county-based data on what the virus is doing in their county, rather than the state-based data about where we are with the virus and the pandemic in our state. And that behavior, that, you know, that information we know about the data in your county, for example, is going to give us a best-case scenario for school. Then we want to measure that against those public health requirements that are expected to be in place for students to be in person, whether it's in, like, whether it's fully in person or a hybrid model of in person, where you perhaps you're splitting your school and having half of your students come one day and half coming another day, for example. Does your school have the ability to help physically distance students? Does your school have the ability to set up some of those hygiene routines as well as hand washing stations? Does your school have the ability to bus students safely? What is the ventilation system like? And so school communities have really been spending the summer looking at those public health protocols and those requirements and doing a lot of work, right? We have principals who have been in buildings with measuring tape, figuring out, like, what the hallway practices could be. We have custodians who have been removing furniture from rooms to make more room for physical distancing, and school clerks and others determining where they could set up perhaps maybe plexiglass so that as you welcome a family in, you're keeping the office staff safe. And school communities can determine those factors, what that public health data is saying about the behavior of the virus in your community, and what your, you know, what your school communities can do to keep students and staff safe when they are in the building. That's determining that first learning model you choose to start the school year.
And is that change throughout the school year? Are they continuing to use that once the school does open up?
Absolutely, yes. So what I've been stressing, what I appreciate about your question too, is that this is the first decision a school community is making about the 2020-21 school year. That we have an entire school year where we need to meet the needs of our students. And of course, our number one priority being keeping that school community safe. We are going to continue to work alongside our school leaders and their staff to make sure that they are getting up-to-date information on their county-based public health data, making sure that we are providing support for them to create those safe learning conditions. It is one of the reasons that we prioritized using coronavirus relief funds to buy cloth masks for every staff person and every student in the state of Minnesota, because we want to contribute to that expectation and that support for those safe learning conditions. And we're also making sure that we are providing the sort of technical support that our school communities need as well to make sure that they can then confidently communicate with their students, families, and staff about the safety precautions in place.
We are talking with Minnesota's Education Commissioner, Mary Catherine Ricker, today on our statewide COVID-19 conversation. Where is the state at right now? Do you know numbers on who's opening fully and all of that? I know we have a lot of counties, so there's a lot of information, but
where we are with the county-based information right now?
Yeah, is the majority of the schools opening in person, would you say?
I would say the majority of our school communities are actively making that decision right now. Some of them have made those determinations. I know the Department of Health, for example, has made a commitment to our school communities to release information to our school communities weekly, every Thursday. So while we are using a 14-day case count for that county-based information, the Department of Health is updating that weekly to make sure that our school communities have the most up-to-date information to make that decision. And so they are right now making those decisions across the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Well, let's move into some of the listener questions that came in this week.
Great.
This one has to do with the model that we just talked about. This is what they had to say. I get that we want to use science and data to make good decisions about whether schools should start with in-person learning or online distance learning, but it seems to me that there are so many variables, including how good the numbers are for COVID cases in a county. Is good science really even possible? And then they go on to say, on the local level, does it just come down to a gut check from that superintendent? And then aren't parents just doing that same kind of gut check? This really isn't science. Can you address that?
Absolutely. And, you know, I am tapping into my science teacher colleagues as I think through this question about, you know, all science is a gathering of information and you know, testing that information against your hypothesis. And so that's what it means to be data-driven, is that we are looking as closely as possible at the data we have and then communicating that. And that's where that confidence level comes in. When we were creating the safe learning plan, we knew that we did not want this to be like snow days, where a superintendent might be looking at a weather report and really, like, at the end of the day, sort of making a best guess about what the next 24 hours of weather would be, right? For example, our plan, actually, unlike any other plan across the country, provides school districts and charter schools with a tremendous amount of support right from the public health experts to determine the most appropriate learning plan for their community. So no superintendent or charter school director has to feel like they are making this decision by themselves, because we are right alongside them. And our schools, additionally, we put in an extra layer of support, because our schools will have direct access to regional support teams and health experts at the Department of Health who have been assigned specifically to their region to help them think through all of the aspects of their plan and make sure they have the most up-to-date information possible, so that we can, and that's how we're building confidence into these decisions, because we know that it's a very uncertain time for so many people. And everywhere we can, build in confidence and let people know they are not in this decision-making alone. We are absolutely alongside them. We wanted to make sure we were doing that.
Let's move on to another question that we got. Last week on the show, the lieutenant governor mentioned that she had heard from a guidance counselor up north who said that basically every school kid now has at least one ACE score. That's the Adverse Childhood Experience score. How do you see the trauma and the stress of all this affecting kids, and how do educators need to respond?
Yes, thank you so much for asking that. If there is one thing we heard consistently since the beginning of the distance learning experience, it has been the deep concern we have for this experience on our children and what that will mean. And our students' mental health was incredibly important before this pandemic. And it was a priority for us to address and support our schools as they are supporting students even before this pandemic started. And then this year, they've experienced trauma living through this pandemic, through the murder of George Floyd, and just the impact all of this is having. And so educators, more than ever before, are going to need to lead with making sure the social and emotional needs of their students are being met in order to move forward with their academic lessons. And that is why we not only made sure that part of the funds Minnesota schools received through the Federal CARES Act would go toward boosting mental health support, we also made sure additional funds were set aside as part of our investment in schools through that same coronavirus relief fund, because we knew our school communities were not going to sit by and just watch our students be impacted and not do anything about it. That's not what educators are about. We are about taking action when we see our students needing support. And so we at the Department of Education and Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan have that same spirit. We are going to take action when we know our students are being impacted by something.
No one wants to say that, you know, there's good in us all living through a pandemic, but it certainly makes, I think, everyone realize that schools are so much more than the academics.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If there's, we certainly saw that this spring when we were, you know, we asked our school communities to take two days to set up a school meal delivery program across the state of Minnesota that ended up, they did it so successfully that they ended up delivering over 22 million meals last spring before the end of the traditional school year. And we gave them 2 days to set up student care opportunities for our first responders and our critical care workers. And by the end of the spring, our school communities were meeting the needs of around 7,000 students a day whose families were part of that critical care network, right? They were first responders. They were hospital workers. And when we think of the work we needed to do last spring to build out our healthcare capacity, our schools in meeting those student care needs played an incredible role in building out that healthcare capacity. And then we asked our educators to take 8 days to build out a distance learning format to dramatically change the way they were meeting the needs of students from their brick-and-mortar settings to a distance learning setting. And they did it. And to your point, the result of that is Minnesotans, some of them for the first time ever, saw how important it was and the role their school communities play in meeting the needs of our students. And I think that will be a lasting lesson for all of us, just seeing our public schools in a whole new appreciative light.
Yeah, I wish I had a button to hit for applause there so that administrators and teachers and all the people working in schools knew how much they were appreciated right now.
That's right. No, absolutely. And we're going to continue, you know, I will say, we'll continue showing our appreciation to them. One of the ways we are dedicated at the Department of Education of appreciating them is that absolute commitment to supporting them as they are going through this, anticipating the sort of support they need, and then again, making sure they know they are not alone in this work. We are in it with them. And when we can't anticipate their need, keeping our ear to the ground, doing that constant listening, being in partnership with them so that they can tell us their needs, and then we, you know, we are there to meet them and we're there to work alongside them.
We had a question this week from Jill from Prior Lake. She's a teacher, and she said, can the state provide N95 masks to teachers rather than cloth masks? I don't think that the cloth masks are effective.
Oh, okay. No, thank you for asking. So we have worked really closely with the experts at the Minnesota Department of Health and on our health guidance and our requirements for schools. And, of course, they have been steeped in the research of what is going to, the conditions that we need to have safe learning environments, the conditions needed to lower the risk of transmission. And N95 masks really are meant for medical professionals and those who are providing close medical services to our students. And so if there is someone in a school community who is providing close medical services to our students, because there are professionals who are doing that work, we would want to make sure that they have the appropriate personal protective equipment to do that. For if, you know, as a classroom teacher, if I am in my classroom with my cloth mask and my students have cloth masks, I mean, the Department of Health, again, is steeped in the research of the effectiveness of that. And that's why we made a commitment to provide cloth masks to every adult in a school building across the state of Minnesota.
You know, where are we at in terms of testing? When the governor was on a few weeks ago mm-hmm. with us for this, he mentioned something about saliva testing being on the horizon. And I know teachers especially and older people that work in schools are pretty nervous about this.
Yes. Well, one of the other commitments we have made and that the governor likely talked about was we also set aside some of the coronavirus relief fund to provide one saliva test for our educators in the field that they could use as they needed to if they felt like they needed that, because we wanted to make sure that is one more measure of providing some confidence in their condition. And then additionally, you know, we have a statewide strategy on testing, on getting into communities, making sure that we have access to testing. We're going to continue to work alongside the Department of Health to make sure that our educators do have access to testing if they are going into their local health provider, for example.
We have a few more questions that came in from folks this week. One of the, we're talking with Mary Catherine Ricker. She is Minnesota's Education Commissioner. It's our statewide conversation. What's being done to help families and kids who have special needs?
Yes. So that has been something we have continued to work on throughout this, like really since last spring with the distance learning period. And we actually know distance learning was particularly tough on our students who are receiving special education. And we know it was tough on some of their families as well. And the support that some of our students need involves very close contact with their educators and with their support staff. And so we really appreciate that since this spring, we have learned more about the virus, about transmission, and how we can provide things like one-to-one services to students in our special education courses. And we've also provided robust, detailed guidance to our school districts and charter schools on how to best navigate a student's individualized education plan or their 504 plan. Because, again, we listened very closely to students and families, what their experiences were, what their aspirations were, quite frankly, what their ideas were for how to meet the needs of children. And same with our special education professionals, as, you know, tapped into their creativity as well. And you'll see that reflected in the guidance we've provided our educators to provide support to our students with special needs.
We had an email this week as well that said, leaders from the White Earth Nation and Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe have told tribal families to keep their kids home and not to do in-person mm-hmm. learning, saying it's just too risky for other family members, especially their elders. What sorts of different considerations wow. among different cultural groups are you seeing, and how is that factored into the decisions?
That's right. This is a great example of the sort of considerations we should all be making across the state in all of our school communities, because every school community has a unique community they are serving that has different needs, perhaps different norms, different cultural expectations. And that is why our executive order that the governor signed, it's 20-82, our executive order, and in our safe learning plan, we have directed our school districts and our charter schools to include educators, school staff, families, and school communities in their decisions about the upcoming school year so they can better meet the needs of their individual communities. Additionally, in that safe learning plan guidance, we have, thanks to the Office of American Indian Education at the Department of Education, we have written specific guidance for tribal considerations as well to make sure that our school communities are very explicit in directing the sort of support and the sort of tribal considerations that might be needed in your school community.
We just got a text in from a teacher who says, how will the school community stay healthy if children are given the choice or they aren't wearing masks? Now, they don't, students have to wear a mask. That's mandatory. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yep. It is part of the mask executive order.
Okay.
Children 5 and older.
Okay.
Yes. And this is a wonderful question because it actually gets to the beginning of a lot of the work that traditionally goes into the beginning of the school year and these additional expectations around the safety measures, the public health protocols that need to be in place to reduce transmission and to create those healthy environments so that we reduce risk, right? And so our educators are incredibly experienced at starting a school year and creating classroom routines. Our school principals and assistant principals are very experienced at creating a classroom, a school climate, and then school-wide expectations. And so when you think of the wealth of expertise that already exists in a school building for a host of expectations that have traditionally always existed in a school community, and you start from there, what are our expectations for how we behave in the hallway? What are the expectations for how you behave in my classroom or how we start reader's workshop in my class, for example? What are the rituals and routines we have for starting our school day? So when you take that deep practice we have in starting a school year with expectations that keep us all safe and facilitate our learning, now what we are going to do this school year is we are going to incorporate those public health practices like the physical distancing, like the frequent hand washing or hygiene practices, and like wearing a mask into those classroom expectations and into our entire school climate expectations as part of what we do to keep each other safe and to keep our school communities healthy and to facilitate that opportunity to learn that all of our students deserve. That taking that approach first is going to be the number one most successful way of incorporating all of these public health practices into our school so our students can return to school safely and so that our staff who are there to meet the needs of our students will also feel confident in their safety as well.
And is part of that climate include buses, and how are things going when it comes to busing?
That's right. So that's right. A student school day, that is such a great question because a student school day begins when they head off to school. And a lot of those rituals and routines and a lot of those attitudes we have toward taking care of each other and safety start with those bus expectations as well. And a bus driver who sets those expectations up at the beginning of the year and school administrators who help practice bus safety with their students. You know, we do have capacity expectations on the bus. And for example, we do expect students to sit at least 6 feet away from their bus driver. So they're going to start practicing that physical distancing right when they get on the bus in the morning. And then they're also going to practice wearing a mask on the bus in the morning and as they're waiting for the bus. And so this is an opportunity for us to extend those safety expectations right at the beginning of their day as they head off to school.
Well, we have run out of time, but we thank you so much for joining us today and answering our listener questions. It was good to talk to you.
Oh, Heidi, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I think you've maybe given me the confidence to call into Green Cheese one of these nights.
You should.
I very much appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much. That is Mary Catherine Ricker. She's talking about KEXE, KBXE Saturday night trivia program called Green Cheese. This broadcast, a collaboration of community radio stations throughout the state in partnership with AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota Communities, and the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Listen to the full conversation, KEXE.org. And if you would like to ask Lieutenant Governor a question next week, email covid@ampers.org or call that number 612-562-9895. I'm Heidi Holton for KEXE, KBXE. Thanks for listening.